Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Good morning, everyone. And I want to thank everyone who was able to join me on this great day. Today we're going to, my name is Sharon Hunter Bay, and I want to welcome you to the morning show. Today we're going to talk about the destruction of the black family. And what factors do you think led to the destruction of the black family? I think I listed several reasons, and I want to know if you agree with me on any of those reasons, but reasons that, like, the black men sent to prison, welfare, unemployment, drugs, and the war on black culture and consciousness. Those are just some of the reasons that we'll explore today. I have with me today Tahaka Amana L. Bay as my guest speaker today. And keep in mind, anyone out there, if you want to call in, if you have a comment or a question, just call. You can dial in at 310-982-4184. Again, that's 310-982-4184. You can raise your hand, and I'll open up the mic, and you can have your say at it. All right, so let's get down to business today. Tahaka, I see that you're on the line. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm here, sister.
Okay, great. We're going to get started, but I wanted to start this thing off with let's hear a clip of maybe what someone else has to say on this subject. We'll listen to this first, and then we'll come back and we'll discuss the clip that I'm about to play and your opinions on the questions of the destruction of the black family, okay?
Okay.
All right. So hold tight, everyone.
Here's how he did it. He said, get the strongest nigger, male, and here's how you treat him. You bring him out and you bring, excuse the language, you bring the nigger female and the nigger baby. And then you tie this strong nigger's foot to a horse on this side and his other foot to a horse on that side. Then you tie and feather that nigger and set him on fire. And when the horses start pulling in two different directions, they'll rip that nigger apart in the presence of the woman and the baby. And her listening to his screams and begging for mercy, she'll know then she can't depend on him. Then you get another big strong nigger, and you bring him and you get your bull whip. And you beat him, you don't kill him, but you beat him within an inch of his life.
Come on.
until he's crying and screaming and praying and begging. And when that woman sees the man in that state, she'll be psychologically frozen. And all her daughters will be like her. They'll come out independent. And the boys, they'll have strong bodies but weak minds. And out of her instinct to protect her male child, she'll break that male child for us and turn him over to us. And we'll give him many fields of labor, but he will be working for us, broken by her. And right now in the South, this is South Carolina. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Some white man would come to your house, and you a beautiful young girl, and he would tell your father, send her out. He want to have sex with her. And the man had no power. He's frightened to death to resist. Gone, baby. And right now, you look at the plot. Black women fill in the colleges. Black men fill in the jails. Where, sister, is your man gonna come from? You at Benedict College, 69-70% female, 30-38% male. So the women outnumber the men, so you become a playground.
Come on, teach, brother, man.
Men playing with you. And you have lost so much respect for yourself.
Come on.
That you allow a man to play with you. And then he go back in the dorm and talk about that bitch that he had. We have become so degraded now that when rap started in the South Bronx, it was young black men using the art of the spoken word, but that was rap.
That's right.
They were talking to young men about the condition, not ghetto life, but they were passing on germs of knowledge and wisdom in rap, but the money lenders and the corruptors saw money in this, and skillfully they turned it from conscious rap to gangster rap, and we began glorifying the gun, glorifying the lowest part of life in the hood, glorifying the sale and use of drugs and the snapping of a cap in your brother. And then they glorify beefs and whatnot between rappers and their posses. Willie Lynch alive and well, West Coast rap, East Coast rap. See, now we're against each other from the East, from the West, from the North, from the South. We're against each other in terms of color. We're against each other in terms of those who are educated and those who are not. We're against each other from those that have money and those that are not. And then those of us who get some status as a councilman, a senator, a mayor, we're just senators and mayors of the plantation. We are in the big house. We're the house niggas. And the ones in the field that don't have no job, they the field niggas. And here you are in college with an inferior education that will not allow you to compete in a global economy. This is real, brothers and sisters. Willie Lynch's stuff is real. It comes all the way up to preachers.
Right.
They lie about how big their church is.
Right.
Well, I have my church seats 3,000. Oh, that ain't nothing. Mine seats 5,000. See, it's that status thing again.
Yes.
You arguing over what? You got more followers. You a bigger preacher. You got more people listening to you. All of this is Willie Lynch.
That's right.
And then the envy of pastors arguing with one another, jealous of one another. Then the white Christian right take a black man and build him up, give him money, put him on television, give him all kinds of backing. I've never heard a black man preach like T.D. Jakes. That man is anointed. But Bush called him. Bush, who messed up down there in New Orleans. He wouldn't even go down when it first happened. Then he come down, but he's like the Lone Ranger looking for Tonto to bail his raggedy behind out. So he brings an anointed man of God to clean his behind. Now, brothers and sisters, in my conclusion, this is a habitation of devils and a hole for every foul spirit. We can't walk the streets of Columbia like we used to do years ago in the South. In the South, we walk, we meet another black person. Good morning. You don't have to know them. Good morning. Good afternoon. How are you? Doors wasn't locked.
Right.
You didn't lock your doors against one another. But today the spirit is so foul among us. We kill each other over a parking space. Kill each other over who won the shot when you're shooting crap. When you're gambling. I've seen black men killed over a burger. Human life means nothing no more. We weren't like this in the darkest days of slavery, brothers and sisters. We are worse now as a people than we have ever been. And now I say to you all, God is angry with America, but God is also displeased with us. We've been playing with God and marketing Jesus like a commodity, but ain't nobody following him. See? Jesus said, if any man would be my disciple, he must first deny himself. Pick up his cross and then follow me, not worship me, follow me. We in church worshiping Jesus rather than following Jesus. In the book of John, Jesus said, God is a spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. Jesus was not trying to get us to worship him. He was trying to get us to worship the one that he said was his father. And when the servant asked him, Master, teach us how to pray, he said, pray on this wise, our Father. Family, family, family. We are a long way off from God.
Okay. Wow, that was powerful by Brother Farrakhan. And very interesting. He touched on a lot of the same points that I brought up about drugs. And he went even more into the slavery background and how that has led to the destruction of the black family also. But very powerful information. When I was doing a little research, actually, about this same topic, I came across something and it went like this. It said in 1950, 17% of African-American children lived in a home with their mother but not their father. Now, by 2010, that had increased to 50%. In 1965, only 8% of childbirths in the black community occurred out of wedlock. In 2010, that figure was 41%. And today, the out-of-wedlock childbirth in the black community sits at an astonishing 72%. 72%. So we want to talk about what led from 1965 to this going from an 8% of out-of-wedlock birth to 72%. And we want to examine what actually made that take place. Brother Tahaka, are you there?
Yes, I'm still here, sister.
All right, sir. What did you think about Brother Farrakhan and the topic? Give me your opinion on what was the biggest factor that led to the destruction of the black family.
Well, Brother Farrakhan's clip was outstanding, and he got down into the nuts and bolts and wiggle pins of how the assault took place. And we have to understand that the assault is still taking place. I think the person that done the best job on explaining to people of African descent what happened, why it happened, and what's going on now is Dr. Frances Cress Welsing in her book, The ISIS Papers. She explained how the Europeans circumvented the globe and noticed that the earth was filled with people of color. And the only species that didn't have high concentrations of carbon like the rest of the world was the Caucasian race. So therefore, what they done was they attacked the world, and the same attack is going on. However, inside the United States, the attack is much more severe. In her book, she describes that the so-called black male has the ability to force procreation instead of the female, and therefore he has the power to cause genetic annihilation. So therefore, he is attacked, and the percentage between the so-called black female and male has dramatically separated. We got, I think it's 39 or 40% more females than men. The ratio is like 39 or 40 to 1, and that is because of the attack against the black male. He's incarcerated in mass. He's being killed and shot down the streets and all these things, and he has not understood what it will take or what he has to do to stop this attack, and that's simply to immerse himself in the knowledge of self and also replace fear with skill. He has to learn how to hunt, fish, trap, and he has to gather these skills so whenever there is a threat, he is able to defend himself. And his mother and father needs to take the children at a young age and teach these children these skills so that they will know what happened, who they are, what to do about it, who did it, and how to solve the equation.
Okay. Well, I thank you, sir, and I have to agree with you 100%. Hold on for me just 1 second. I got another caller with their hand up. I'm going to bring them in.
Okay.
All right. Area code 412. Tell us who you are, what's your name, and your comment or question.
Hey, Sister Sharon and Sister Lisa. How are you?
Hey, Lisa. How you doing?
I'm good. Hi, Brother Tarka.
All right. How are you?
Good. good. I was listening to the excerpt of Farrakhan, and there were so many parts that I wanted to touch on, but one of the things that I think is relevant is he referred to Willie Lynch quite often. And a couple of years ago, maybe last year, it was last year, I was listening to a radio show, and the guy that wrote the Willie Lynch letter was on there. And he was questioned by the host, and he asked him, why did he write it? And he said he wanted us to see how we are separated, and that Willie Lynch never existed. It was a psychological test that he wanted to administer. And so one of the things that, I think that we as a people have to understand, we're asking the Caucasian to educate us. We're asking the Caucasian to feed us. We're asking the Caucasian to do everything that we should be doing for ourselves. And so as long as we depend on them, it will be hard for us to overcome these situations that we're in today. It's like going to be in that battle and asking the other side not to shoot you just yet. We're in a war. Really, we're in a war. And it's a subtle war. They're not shooting us down in the street like they used to. They are. Yeah, they are. I correct myself. They are doing that, but they're not doing it as much as they used to. They are subtly controlling our minds, and if the mind is controlled, then the body will follow suit. So they don't have to have the plantation anymore, because the plantation is the education system. The plantation is the job that we go to every day. The plantation is depending on them to provide us food. And I think about it. Yesterday I was at a food co-op owned by, those Caucasians, and I was buying a 5-gallon drum of distilled water. I usually buy two at a time, and I had stopped buying it from Lowe's because they have water, but they don't have distilled. And I mistakenly took the food co-op's 5-gallon drum to Lowe's and took the Lowe's drum to the co-op. Now, I'm getting my water, right, because you have to return. This is how subtle their racism is. I'm getting my water. You have to return the empties to get a credit for the new, right? So there are three white boys standing there watching me pick up 2 5-gallon drums of water. None of them move to say, you need help. None of them said anything. They watch me. I get in line to pay for my water, and the little faggot one, the little gay one, comes up behind me and says, Miss, this isn't our empty bottle. You can't buy two of those because this is not our empty bottle. I said, wow. He went up and around this water thing, looked at the bottle, and found me in the store. But he couldn't ask if I needed help. And you know what's sad? You know what's sad, Sister Sharon? The fact that that's one of the only places I can get certain foods from. And this is how they have us. This is how they have us, unless we are able to do what Brother Tarka talks about, growing your own food and doing it. Right now I can't do that. I wouldn't give them crackers a dime if I didn't have to. But they make it so we do depend on them. Until we get our independence, we are going to suffer a long time. And independence is not going to come with marching down the street and marching in front of a store. Those days are over, and they're not effective. And it's not going to come with Reverend Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton sitting in the back room saying, well, how do you want me to cool these black people down? It's not going to work like that. What did Chuck D say? The revolution will not be televised.
That's what he said.
Well, yeah. Well, I would like to relate something that occurred, and I remember this because my great grandfather, he had 13 sons, and there was a man, he was a Caucasian gentleman in the area, and I was just growing up, and these brothers, they were older gentlemen, but this man, they were having trouble out of this man. And these boys, they killed that man.
Hmm.
And I noticed that when they killed him, it was like there was total peace.
Mm-hmm.
There was no more problems. All of it was gone. There was nothing but peace. But it was only when they killed him, is what I'm saying. Now,
mm-hmm.
we have a lot of different opinions about things, and we've tried all types of different circumstances. But I just never forgot that day when everything ended up being all right
mm-hmm.
when they killed him. So there is a lot of books that are available, and we cannot, just like the sister said, we cannot go into anybody's educational system, especially in America, and expect for them to teach us something about our own selves.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend, this is what I do. I go out. There are quite a few used antique bookstores that have an abundance of some of the greatest books that are written by our people of African descent that contains our truthful ancient story. And when you got that, then you have some power. You can short-circuit anyone who is living a lie. And once you get that instilled in you, you truly have a power base, because anytime something comes up about a lie, you can always tell the truth. But more importantly than that, you have to have skill. You have to learn how to survive. If you're out in the wilderness, you're going to learn how to shoot, learn how to kill, learn how to take that animal you have killed and skin it. You're going to have to learn how to fish, how to trap, how to walk through the bush and hunt and use the markings and stuff of the bush and techniques to locate something that is moving ahead of you. You've got to learn how to find it. And so these are the skills that we're going to have to learn. Learn how to fish. Learn what fish to eat. Learn how to cook it, how to prepare it. All these things. And when you have these skills, there is no fear. You do not live in fear of someone shooting your child down in the streets and saying, well, I'm a police officer and this is my job. You just don't have that fear. It rolls off your back like water off the back of a duck. And, your child is in prison and they're knocking on your door and telling you, well, your child has died in prison and we're going to do an investigation. You don't have time, but because there is no fear. But
mm-hmm.
my thing is, when you know who you are, and when you know who the enemy is, you replace fear with skill and immerse yourself into knowledge of self and your ancient story. And then you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting, and I have to agree with both of my callers, Ms. Lisa and Tahaka, for your comments, and I appreciate that. And I would like to just piggybacking on what Sister Lisa had to say about the education system being a plantation. I wholeheartedly agree with that. I think it was Malcolm X who said that only a fool would let the enemy educate their child. And that is so true. And I used to be a proponent myself of the education system. I've been in it. I excelled in it. I've taught in it. I taught history of all things, American and world history. It's something that I taught to middle school kids. And even when I got into it, I got into it because I thought I could make a difference in some of the kids' lives, because I knew at that age, that middle school range is when most of black males got disinterested in the system anyway, because they had already figured out that it wasn't for them. So I thought I could get in there and make a difference. So I was teaching at this little private school, and I had a mixture of diversity, white and black students in there. And when we got to world history and we were talking about the beginning of life and things of that nature, they had pictures in the history book. All the pictures were somebody of Caucasian descent. They was all white. But they were talking about they was in Africa. And so I had so many, came across with so many discrepancies in that, and I knew a little bit of the truth, and I just couldn't just sit there and teach the curriculum as they wanted me to without putting my knowledge in on it and had the class research deeper into what other than the book had to say. And I'm sad to say that the white students in the classroom took more interest and did more research on their own than the black students in the classroom. They just really didn't seem very interested in it. And I don't know why the white students were more interested in it, but they were, and they seemed to take a better hold of the material and grasp more material than the black students did. But on the whole, the education system is just that. It's a plantation system. I wish I, about $50,000 later, I realized that. I wish I could have realized
that. Isn't that the truth?
Mm-hmm. Right, before I ventured into that. But it's just not meant for us to be successful in that system at all. And I saw online the other day where more and more black families are pulling their kids out of the education system and homeschooling them. So I'm glad to see we're moving in that direction on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I was, when Brother Taharka mentioned our kids being shot in the street, I was reading an article a couple of weeks ago in the USA Today where a 93-year-old woman had been shot by a Texas police officer. And they called it a domestic. So when he got there, she's 93, mind you, old black woman. She was waving a knife. And instead of him taking the time to get the knife off of her, he shot her not once. He shot her several times, and she died from her injuries. And all I could think of is, you live to be 93 years old and you get shot down like a dog?
Wow.
It just shows you that they don't have.
I understand that because I know the nature of the shooter. But my question is, what did the men do when that happened?
Right.
What did they do?
They probably got together and marched and sang some songs and hold hands.
No, Sharon, no, they didn't. They said, well, you know, the Lord's going to take care of this for us.
Oh, yeah. That's it.
The Lord, she's in a better place now. The Lord's going to take care of it.
I definitely think of all of that marching and stuff is over. I have he's 20 now. He just turned 20 a few months back, son. And I had, when that Trayvon Martin stuff had came out and they were down there marching and singing, and I asked my son, I said, you want to go participate in them marches? He told me, the only way I'm going to march is with a Uzi loaded. So the young people that's coming around now, they're not into all of that stuff, that marching and stuff anymore.
No.
They have already witnessed that stuff is not really working, and they're not about it. So try to get some of these young brothers and stuff out there in the street and ask them to come and march and see what they do for you.
I would love to be able to turn that negative anger and energy that I see in them young kids at school into something like making a change in our communities. Our brothers and sisters have a lot of anger, and this is the results that we see. I remember working at a juvenile detention center for a summer, and I showed Eyes on the Prize to a classroom full of boys. And they were like, why you show us this? I said, y'all need to know y'all history. And in this particular clip, these three white boys were coming up behind this black guy. He had to be about 6'4". And they smacked him in the head with a brick. And he went down like a tree. And the kid looked at me and was like, see, that ain't going to happen today. I wish somebody would smack me with a brick. You know, and they have a lot of pent-up frustration and energy. If we could just find a way to get them to turn that into something that's more beneficial to our neighborhood, we would be in a better state, because they see the hypocrisy in the marching. They see the hypocrisy in the churches. They see the hypocrisy in religion, and that's why they're not doing the things that their parents expect them to do, because they see that it's not getting them anywhere.
You're right.
You know, we gotta find a way. We gotta find a way for our kids to reel in that energy they have and make it something that can be beneficial to all of us in our neighborhood.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, that is so true. And the more I talk to the young brothers, including my sons, they just not downfall. They do have a lot of anger because they do recognize the injustices in the system. And I tell you, I managed to get both of my sons through that hypocritical educational system in which they actually finished and marched down the aisle. But it was a struggle. And I was kind of torn, too, because I had lost all faith in that education system, and then I felt kind of hypocritical by making them go through the system that I already didn't like myself. So, but they had already gotten so far in it, and they only had a little bit more to go on and finish it up, so I encouraged them to go ahead and finish it up. But if I had to do it all over again, no way would I go that route. I would homeschool both of my young men and teach them something about themselves.
And that's the other thing that we I don't believe we understand on the whole, is that, you know, our kids are turned off to our history, because who wants to start with slavery? Who wants to start knowing that they were slaves? And I think a lot of Caucasian kids, because their stuff is instilled in them, in particular Jewish kids, their history is instilled in them from the day they come out, from the way their parents look, the way they eat, the way they worship, and all those things. But not only that, the racism to maintain their status quo is indoctrinated into the system, so they don't have to do the things that we have to do to learn about ourselves, because they're learning about them.
Okay. Well, okay, guys. I'm going to go ahead and just take a quick little break right here real quick, and then we'll come back and finish up this discussion. So hold on for me, okay?
When it comes to child support, many brothers and sisters just come to the conclusion that I'm just done. There is nothing I can do. They got me. Well, what we need to understand is this whole system is bogus, believe it or not. And for proof of that, why don't you send for my free articles? We'll also send one good audio clip and one good solid video clip to you. And by the time you listen to this and read this, you will clearly understand that there is a way out. You can send that to taraka53@hotmail.com. That's taraka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush that right straight to you. Don't hesitate to visit my website, www.newdebtelimination.com. For information on us, go to www.newdebtelimination.net. Don't hesitate to call me, area code 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's not over. It's just what you know. Peace. Living in a constant state of fear has never been good. Many of us fear the Internal Revenue Service. We don't know what to do about it. For one reason, we don't know what it is. Send for my free reports to tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's tahaka53@hotmail.com. We'll send our articles to you. We'll also send one good solid video that should do it once and for all about exercising your freedom of right to travel. And our second video shows you exactly what to do with your writ of habeas corpus, how to deal with these people in the courtroom, and what to send these people and how to respond to them. Send that to tahaka53@hotmail.com, or you can call me, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't hesitate to visit our website, tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's the email website, www.newdateelimination.com.
Okay, all right, we're back. And keep in mind, if anyone has a question or a comment, you can call in at 310-982-4184. Again, that's 310-982-4184. And I'll open up the mic and you can tell us what your subject is. All right. So I listed five reasons that I thought was the destruction of the black family, and they were black men sent to prison, the welfare system, unemployment, drugs, and the war on black culture and black consciousness. Now, in my opinion, I think the war on black culture and consciousness would have to be the biggest out of those, biggest factor out of those five to lead to the destruction, because if we knew more, I feel like if we knew more about ourselves and our culture, then we wouldn't have been so easily gullible to be led down the path of the Caucasians to jump in the education systems to get out of that. I think if we had a strong black conscience and culture, then we would have been stronger enough to fend off the contacts of the enemy. So what do you guys think, Sister Lisa, what do you think out of those? Which one do you think led to the destruction the most?
I would have to say I would agree with you. The consciousness, again, if you control the head, you control the body. But at the same time, Sharon, I look at some of the things that we do as a people, some of the traditions that we have as a people, and we are still holding on to some of our traditions from the motherland. We just don't know that they're traditions until we start, you know, digging into some information, and you go, oh wow, that my great aunt used to do that. I was watching something. I was watching Dr. Barashingo talk about the holidays, and he said that during Halloween or during some time where, you know, if you thought there was an evil spirit, people would throw salt behind their back or throw salt in the doorway. And I went and I sat there and I said, my great aunt used to do stuff like that. She believed that if you comb your hair and you have hair remaining in the comb, you need to burn it in an ashtray because people can use that to bring spirits to you. Or if you hit somebody with a broom, you spit on the broom. Those things, even though they were watered down, they were still traditions that our people brought from the motherland. And we as a people, we still have that spirit. We just have to tap into it. We are a special group of people. We were the first ones on this planet, and we have to tap into that wonderful greatness that we all have within us. And if you control the mind, you control the body. So, you know, they're controlling our mind so they can put us in prison. They're controlling our minds so they can tell us, you know, that being homosexual and a grown man with a beard can wear a mini skirt and high heels and lipstick. That doesn't even make sense to me. And when you control the mind, you can, you know, tell them that Jesus is going to save you. You better not do that. Give me all your money. Don't have a glorious life here. Wait until you get to heaven. Then you can walk on the streets paved in gold. But right now, you just give me all your money.
That is so exactly. true.
Mm-hmm. That's, I agree with you. I think the consciousness needs to be uplifted. And you know, I've noticed that a lot of us that are conscious, once we become that way, we tend to judge those that are not. We tend to judge them harshly, and we turn our nose. I've seen it. People turn their nose up at those that don't know, as if they always knew.
That is so true. That is very true, and I think I have even, as I've become more conscious myself, I struggle with my family and friends and stuff who haven't reached the level, but I get very frustrated with them when they, you know, they say I'm brainwashed, and I'm going, am I the one that's brainwashed? Are you really sure? Okay. All right, but we do tend to give those people, and we tend to forget our struggle and how long it took us to reach that point. We weren't at this point. I know I was so far away from than I am today. And so you just got to be patient and just keep on talking to people. And I believe if we keep on doing what we're doing, you, me, Tahaka, and the rest of us conscious people, that more and more people are going to listen. And more people are going to go ahead and do the research and have an open mind and not just willing to accept everything that somebody says to you as truth and without investigating. That's why I give people, when I tell them, I'm giving you an option. If you think I'm lying or you think I'm brainwashed, then let's research it and find out who's telling the truth.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I found out is one of the problems that we are having as a people is we don't feel like it's necessary for us to go back and study our ancient story, because one thing is going wrong. We're under the impression that slavery is our history. No, that's not our history. When we are talking about the stuff that we need to know, we are talking about everything going backwards in time about the greatness and magnificence of an ancient people, an ancient culture, bypassing the slavery. I mean, you can learn a little something about that. That happened. However, there's much more for us to be proud of and for us to be able to use as a defense mechanism when we are having people who are telling lies. First of all, we have to understand that the people that covered up your ancient story doesn't have a history. So what they have done is grafted themselves onto an already existing story. And when we begin to study this type of information, then we'll discover that this is the most exciting information that we could have ever possibly learned. I mean, it's. I have learned some of the most fascinating stuff about our ancient story. I mean, it was just totally incredible to hear the truth about Alexander the Great. And but people are saying, well, you know, do you know the story about Alexander the Great? Well, I'm not understanding who you're referring to. There was nothing great about him. He was a homosexual, and he also came into the interior of Africa, and when he got to the border of Ethiopia, he had the Candaces waiting on him, suspended between bull elephants. And as far as he can see to the left was the African nation, as far as he could see to the right was the African nation, and as far as he could see behind her was the African nation. And when he arrived with all of his armies, Queen Candaces turned around and ordered the Africans to simply walk into the jungle as an invitation to Alexander the Great, and that would have been an opportunity for him to prove to the world that he was great. However, he turned around and headed back to Europe, because we would have gotten our first commercial on the Roach Motel early, because he knew that if he had checked in, he would not have checked out. When you read these stories, I mean, there's one
right
there in the Book of Acts. If you read in the Book of Acts, you'll find that about the man who was sitting in the chariot reading the book of Isaiah, and the man came to him and said, understanding what thou readest, said, how can I understand except someone should guide me? Well, the man that was reading the book was the treasurer of Queen Candace. She was in Jerusalem at that time, and she was arguing with the Romans, and the Romans wanted her to pay taxes. She said, I'm not paying taxes. They said, well, if you don't pay taxes, we're sending a garrison to take our money. She said, bring it on. But we pick up the story in Introduction to African Civilization by John G. Jackson, where he tells the story of the garrison coming out and catching her traveling across the land and attacked. But it was the worst whooping that the Romans had ever gotten. She killed 40 men by herself. They put her out to stop her from killing. And when they finally got her back to Rome, they begged her. They said, well, look, you ain't got to worry about paying taxes no more. Just don't tell nobody about the beat down. Go read it for yourself.
Okay, I got another caller with a hand up. Let me bring them on the line. Area code 716. Tell us who you are and what's your question or comment.
Man, Hotep, brothers and sisters, this is Ron Dixon. I'm from Buffalo, New York.
Hey, Ron.
How you guys are doing? I just wanted to kind of comment on the you were saying the five things that are kind of destroying the black family.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I wanted to say, like, man, for the past 2 years now, you know, I've been kind of seeking truth, you know, trying to find the right answers and everything. And I feel like probably one of the biggest things that kind of hinder me from my process is kind of the hoarding of knowledge. I've been reaching out to a lot of people trying to find what's the next steps to go about finding truth or kind of bringing people together as far as our community goes. I'm actually a college student and I major in business. And right now, I went through everything as far as trickology that's been going on, not in the English language, to being a sovereign, to being a Moorish national. And I think that's kind of where it's leading me to right now about the status correction for the Moorish nationals. And I'm kind of stuck there. I'm trying to get help from people right now. And I think that's probably the biggest benefit right now for anybody that's in the black community to learn more about the knowledge and to kind of put themselves in a better position to reach back and help another black family so that we can all unite.
Okay.
Well, brother, what you might want to do is go over there to www.moorishamericangov.org and register with the Moorish government. And dial into that national conference call that's held 7 days a week at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You see the call-in number. And they teach you everything you need to know about your ancient Moorish story, your culture, where we are, and what the Moors are doing. And you can also find out from them where there are other Moors in your city that you can communicate with and associate with. So just go to MoorishAmericanGov.org.
Okay. You said it was a Moorish American Guru?
Moorish American Gov, GOV.org.
Okay. And I'm like I said, I've been studying on that as well. I understand about Resolution 75 and basically how that's the foundation. And like I said, I've been doing a lot of research in the last 2 years, and I've been bouncing back and forth between constitutional rights and I even emailed, if I'm not mistaken, you yesterday, and you had sent me a couple of links, and I was reading up on those too as well about the Black Laws Dictionary. And like I said, I'm very cognizant of all of that. I'm just trying to find out where to start as far as building the foundation.
Well, you're going to start with your ancient story. That's the foundation for anything that you're attempting to do, even discharging debt. The first thing you need to know is yourself. You need to get your ancient story, the ancient culture of people of African descent, period. That is the foundation before you ever begin to do anything. You keep attempting to do things without a foundation. You cannot build a house without a foundation. And that is the foundation that you need.
One of the first books I read, Brother Ron, was The Miseducation of the Negro, and I followed up with that with Malcolm X's autobiography. And I mean, there are so many great scholars that have done so much that you'll see when you start to go and find those types of books. Those scholars will come up like Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark and Booker T. Coleman. They're amazing people. Marimba Ani. We have such a vast history that once you get started, you're going to feel like, well, how am I ever going to know all this stuff? And there's so much you'll never know, but you'll know enough, like Taharka said, to build your foundation and be able to grow as a person, as a black man, as you know. You'll be able to grow.
Okay.
Exactly. Check out all of those authors, and you might want to check out Frances Chris Wilson also. She's excellent.
Absolutely.
Author.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, get all those, brother, and get that with that European education that you're getting in business. You can get that, and then once you get your story down, then you're going to be a really strong brother.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And then when you get in school, you'll be able to teach your teacher something.
Exactly. At least you'll be able to call them on some of their junk, boy. You'll be calling
their
them
junk.
Then. I like that part of it. When they spew out some of that nonsense, you can correct them. Let me stop you right there, teach.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny that you have brought that up, because I actually had an African-American study class that I was in. And I actually ended up, me and the teacher got into a dispute over a couple of things. I mean, one of the biggest topics was, she asked, was there still racism in America today? And she was kind of leaning towards the answer of no.
Oh,
and,
no.
I'm giving her facts. This was kind of like before Trayvon Martin and everything had took place, but I'm giving her facts, and, you know, she kind of got on the defense, and she was a black female. She got on the defense with me. And I remember, I know we had a strong disliking towards each other. She ended up actually failing me in that class. But,
wow.
One
of the things, brother, you take forward with you is, do not expect, because their skin looks like yours, for them to treat you as if you were brothers and sisters. You go by how they treat you, because sometimes we will destroy ourselves faster than the Caucasian can ever do. So
exactly. You
have to just judge by how, you know, you're able to interact with them, because we have to remember we've been whipped into these mental slavers that we're in, and all of us do not have, even though we look alike, we do not have the same consciousness. And I this is my opinion, that everybody thinks racism is over because, you know, Obama's in office, but he's the face of racism. He's going into Africa murdering our people like no tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to understand that.
Okay, everyone, we're coming down to the close of the broadcast. I just want to thank everyone for your participation and calling in and on the topic, and I'm going to do another show really soon, and I appreciate everybody's support with me on this. And just to let you know, we'll be doing this again. Just keep in touch with Facebook and Brother Taharka, and we'll know when the next one is coming. Until
all right.
Next
thank
time,
you, Sister Sharon.
Thank
all
you,
right.
Lisa, and Brother Taharka. And I'll see you guys later. All right.
Bye-bye.
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 that I would miss the child of wish, and haven't I sung to you of the knight in armor bright, faithful and true to you, darling?
And true to you, darling.